welcome to this very special episode of the Blue Toon Podcast, the first of five special interviews we have with legendary names in Peterhead Football Club's history. Our first Blue Toon legend is former leading scorer Martin Babbage. Martin, who of course played for the club between 2003 and 2013, talks to us in part one about his time at Inverness Carlow, deciding not to pursue a full-time playing career, and his first season at Balmoore.
Martin Babbage, welcome to the Blue Toon Podcast. How are you?
Thanks, yeah, good. Yourselves?
All right, yes. Absolute pleasure to have you on. So hopefully we can rekindle some of the memories of yesteryear for you.
Hopefully. It's been a good few years now, but I'm looking forward to it.
The normal question that everybody asks these days is, how was your sort of last year, being the last 18 months? How was the kind of lockdown and pandemic affected you?
It's not been great for anybody, has it? It's we were working from home in the main, been getting out of the office just to break the monotony of being stuck in the house. But it's some of the more simple things that I think are have been frustrated by, I suppose, and difficult to please everybody all of the time. But you know, things like, I suppose, watching football. I mean, the first lockdown was terrible. There was no football. Everything stopped. And obviously you get the joy of it coming back on the telly, and albeit with no crowd. And that was different. But at least you kind of got a little bit more sense of reality. I mean, what difference that makes to your week when you've got football to look forward to. I guess for me, obviously, like two boys that both play, and the upheaval that it's caused, you know, for them, in terms of having to stop, and equally when they got started again, some of the restrictions, you know, you can't stand outside in an open field and watch them play. I mean, some of it's just ridiculous, but hopefully common sense, and, you know, aligned with the kind of vaccine, you know, this time round, that they're getting started again, things can be a little bit more normal as we move towards normal life again, I suppose.
And are you in the camp of football's pretty boring without the fans, or do you quite enjoy it without the fans?
No, I think you need the fans there. You know, I think obviously every level's different, but you know, I think there's more, and I appreciate there's 150,000 things for everybody to think about, and you know, probably, you know, treating everything individually is difficult, but you know, there's certain things, junior football, high league football, even lower league football, you know, that it would be possible to get people in and out of stadiums, keep them socially distanced with a one-way system. And I just think the blanket approach hasn't been the right thing to do. And I think it could have been managed differently, along with, you know, a number of other things that would really have helped the kind of lower level clubs financially and in all sorts of ways. So, yeah, I think the sooner fans get back, the better. And I think there's light at the end of the tunnel now as far as, you know, expectations around getting certain volumes of people in, and potentially for the Euros in the summer. So here's hoping that all comes to fruition.
And I guess you sort of talk about lower league clubs, or some of the Premier League clubs as well could probably manage, like Kilmarnock and Hamilton, with the size of the attendances, it could probably easily be socially distanced without playing without fans, can it?
No, absolutely. I just think the biggest factor is obviously getting people in and out grounds safely. You know, if you're kind of got confined entrances, and you know, you're going to have people passing by each other indoors and through turnstiles, and that adds a level of complication, I suppose, and potential risk that maybe you know, is something that needed curtailed to a certain degree. But it's, you know, it's going to junior grounds where, you know, in wide open spaces, you're standing in a grass field, you know. As it turns out, you know, and I guess this sums up the boredom, but if you actually look at most of the grounds and the kind of posts that separate, you know, the railings that go around grounds, they're actually 2 metres apart, so you don't even have to do much to kind of distance in. So I guess that's something that's important to me, and something that I suppose would be in the forefront of my thoughts. But like I say, I'm sure there's 150,000 other things that, you know, are important to other people, and it's impossible to think of everything. I just think it could have been handled a little bit better. But hey ho, hopefully we're getting through to a return to normality of some kind in the not too distant future. So hopefully we don't have to think about it again.
No, let's hope not then. So let's go on to happier things then. Martin Barnes, the footballer. Tell us then, your early days, you started with Forest Mechanics.
Yeah, it was actually on loan. I suppose going back a little bit further from that, I was signed with Dundee in an S-form as a kid, having been released from Aberdeen. I think I was 14, going to the primary school select and trained with Aberdeen for a few years in the gravel car park outside Pittodrie. How things have progressed, and then kind of had a bit of a growth spurt and got that gangly, awkward kind of stage, and Dundee signed me, I think, age 15 on an S form, and I was down training in school holidays and had a couple of years there. And when I was probably, what would I have been, 17, it was a case of, I want to go to university, I want to go and make sure that I've got a good education behind me before I really think about what else I'm going to do. And Dundee were a bit kind of surprised by that. I think they probably were expecting to jump at the chance of going full-time on a YTS, but it wasn't for me, and I just wanted to make sure that, given the uncertainty of it all, that I kind of finished my education. So at that stage, I was actually on loan to Lewis United in the junior league up here, Super League, as it is now. I had a great season there, enjoyed it, and kind of parted ways with Dundee midway through that season, kind of when I told them about my intentions with uni. But there was a bit of interest from various clubs. I think Brechin and Montrose had gone and played trial games for both of those, and a couple of Highland League teams as well, Huntley and Keith, and I would have been 17 at the time, and enjoyed that, and fortunate enough to have a kind of few offers, a few opportunities to go and sign for different clubs at the end of that season. But just towards the tail end, Steve Patterson came to watch a couple of games, and one in particular I remember spotting him at Fermartin, and we ended up having a conversation, and they were really good, and they would let me train full time with them during my university holidays, if you like, which were pretty extensive, as you know, for all those who and try and manage my kind of timetable with training and playing. And actually trained at Peterhead when Dad and Ronnie Bring were managers there at the time, whilst at Inverness, and at home doing university. So signed there in the summer of 98. Spent the first 6 months, it was League One as it is now, League Two at the time. Spent the first sort of 6 months of the season with Inverness, and predominantly on the bench and coming on, and a good experience, seeing a lot of different grounds, and scored a couple of goals and enjoyed it a lot, but probably hadn't played the minutes that I guess an 18-year-old would have wanted to play. So used to travel up and down the road, and remember Fraser Kellis, who was Steve Patterson's mate, ended up speaking to him in Inverness one time, and he was talking about taking a couple of the Inverness lads on loan. And I kind of said, oh, am I one of them? And I actually wasn't at the time, but he raised the question, I think, to Steve, and ended up going the second half of the season on loan at Forest, which was great. Played every week, scored a lot of goals, great bunch of boys, and we actually went on to win the Highland League Cup at the end of the season as well at Borough Briggs. Scored in the finals, we beat Keith 1-0. I really, really enjoyed that 6 month stint, and obviously went back to Inverness in the summer for the second year of my contract.
Do you think that move wouldn't have come about if you hadn't asked the question? Or do you think you just put yourself in the shop?
Answer the question. I think I was always going to ask the question, because I think, you know, as great as it was being in and around the kind of first team at Inverness at 18 and seeing all the grounds and, you know, playing the cup competitions, I wanted to play. I've always been a bit like that. You know, you want to play, and you want to be seen as kind of important in whatever team you're playing in, and, you know, balancing that off experience versus needing to play and get minutes and continue to kind of improve and develop. Because at that point, I hadn't even played in the Highland League, I'd played in the Junior League and jumped straight to League One as it is. So it was a big step, and some fantastic players at Inverness at the time and learned a lot. But we'd always asked the question about, you know, can I go on loan and get some minutes? Whether that would have been 6 months, whether that would have been Forest, I don't know. But it just all kind of joined up nicely, and that was how I spent the second half of that season.
What was your first impressions of Steve Patterson?
He's just a really, really nice guy, and he's just got a great way about him. Whereas, you know, you hear a lot of people speak about Steve and you know, the career and some of the stories that they've had with Steve over the years, and I just found him a really decent, good guy, and the type of person that just understood you individually, understood what kind of support or coaching or, you know, bollocking, if you like, that you needed, depending on the nature, the person. And he was just a really good guy to play for, somebody you wanted to give your all for, and I think the world of the guy, still do, and you know, shame obviously to see him have some troubles over the years, but just a great guy, and a guy I can't speak highly enough of.
Do you remember your debut for Inverness?
Yeah, I do. It was down at Queen of South. I came on, I think, probably about 20 minutes to go. They were a decent side at the time, I think, we drew the game. But long way to travel, and lasting memory. I think there was a radio in the dugout. There was a big horse race on that day. You know, Pelly's listening to the horses as the game's going on. It was good fun. But, you know, to be fair, you know, the Inverness team at the time was full of experience, good players, and, you know, I don't think, other than keeping people happy, you know, training them, keeping them fit, you know, a lot of mature players that kind of manage themselves on the pitch, you know, a lot of times. So everything just kind of worked, you know, the squad of players and the manager, and Alec Caldwell was Steve's assistant at that time. Alec obviously went on to manage Elgin, and Duncan Shearer came in to replace him. But Duncan was obviously a player at Cali at the time. But yeah, that was my debut, and first goal that season was at East Fife at their old ground. Barry Wilson had kind of gone down. They actually had a shot. And I'm sure he'll say to this day he still thinks it was going in. It wasn't, and I made sure it did. So that was my first goal. Couldn't have really missed, about 3 yards. But you take them all.
You mentioned Duncan Shearer. Did you, as a youngster, did you learn a lot from somebody like him?
He was great as a forward. Good, fun guy to have around as well. And, you know, he would take time to kind of work with you and just, I suppose, give you his wisdom. He headed the ball like nobody I've ever seen, you know, since. It was incredible. He used to head it as hard as people could kick it. And, you know, just his little movements. I mean, by that point, obviously, he was getting on a wee bit as far as playing was concerned. I remember him from Aberdeen when he's an absolute legend here. It was good and to have guys like him around. But he wasn't alone. You know, there was a number of people. I mean, Charlie Christie. You see Ryan with all the success he's having just now. But Charlie was an unbelievable player that, you know, I guess if he'd had different options, and I know he was at Celtic, you know, he could have gone on and do, you know, what Ryan's doing now. You know, he was phenomenal. And that winning mentality as well. And he could be through that whole team. There was loads of guys in that team that were just good professionals, really, really good players. And Steve had done a terrific job to bring them all together.
I mentioned, we'll kind of go with mentioning that Scottish Cup win at Celtic in 2000. Mm-hmm. I know Celtic were kind of struggling that kind of season a little bit under the new management and things like that, but did you kind of guys go there thinking that you had a chance or any kind of chance of winning?
No, I don't think we went there with a view that we had a chance of winning the game. I think obviously we went down on the Saturday and there was a bit of guttering that was loose in the stand. The game got postponed and we had to go back on the Tuesday night, and it was a strange game because, again, I was on the bench that night, and you were constantly waiting for Celtic to kind of kick into gear. I mean, you went through their team: Mark Viduka, Ian Wright, you know, former Arsenal legend, was on the bench, Ail Berkovic, Lubo Maravcic. You know, you go through that team and you think, why were some really, really good players that, you know, should have wiped the floor with us in reality. But, you know, you're sitting watching the game as it was developing, get more and more confident as each of the kind of minutes went by, because we were more than holding our own. We were creating chances. They weren't creating much against us. We were right up for it. Like I say, we got a bunch of players that were very, very good players. And although we were playing in the Championship, as it was, Division 1 at the time, you know, guys that were more than capable, and we wanted to prove that they were more than capable of playing in the Premier League. And that was strange. And we kind of scored, and they scored pretty much immediately afterwards. Birchill, I think, equalised, and you're thinking, all right, we've annoyed him now, here we go. And no, it actually went the other way. I mean, we went on and created a raft of chances, and Peanut got a penalty, Barry Wilson scored, Bobby Mann as well, and it was just a really, really surreal, strange experience, but a brilliant one at that. And I think a lot of the Celtic fans stayed behind at the end and kind of clapped us off the pitch as well, which I thought was a nice gesture. But you know, they were obviously in a bit of disarray themselves at the time, and about to go through a lot of change. But just an incredible experience. And even following on from that, I mean, I was a student at a time, as you know, and because of the delay, we ended up playing Aberdeen in the next round of the cup, live on Sky up at Inverness, and I started that game, and we drew up the road. I think I can't remember who actually scored, but Bellavedd equalised for Aberdeen, and took it to a replay down at Pittodrie on the Tuesday. So I'm sitting there, and you know, back in the time, it was a weekly wage slip, student though, and of course you get the win bonus at Parkhead, you get the draw bonus for the Aberdeen game because it was live on Sky. It was kind of an enhanced draw bonus. And then appearance money for the Tuesday night, you know, replay at Pittodrie. So it kind of felt all happy with yourself at the time when you got a wage slip, because it was, but just a brilliant few weeks. And to be fair, they weren't alone at Inverness. You know, we went and beat Hearts down at Tynecastle, and Ricardo Fuller had played at the time and was a really good player. Beat them 3-1, beat them comfortably. These guys were really, really good players. It was a really, really good team, and there was a number of cup shocks.
I know. I think you probably left the time that Steve Patterson left. But was it a surprise to you, or maybe not a surprise to you, that he left to go to Aberdeen?
It was no surprise that he had a lot of interest. He'd done a phenomenal job. So he's kind of one of his really best assets or skills, I suppose, is just picking players and identifying players. I mean, you look at Paul Sheeran, he was playing in Norway, I think, or Sweden at the time when he came back to Timberness. He was a phenomenal football player. Obviously, Barry Robson, Barry Wilson, Charlie Christie, I've mentioned. There was a couple of Canadian lads that were international players, really, really good players. I could go through and list them all, but you know, he managed to put a team together and create a spirit that you won't find in many places, that's for sure. And so I wasn't surprised at the interest. I'd left in the summer. I'd kind of come to the end of my contract, and I was full time last year because I'd finished my university, and I kind of made a promise that I would go and have a go full time before I sort of thought what to do next. And Full time was great. I found myself, because I was living away from home, I found myself, you know, training in the morning, in the afternoon you potter around, you know, some folk would go to the bookies. I used to go to the gym, you know, go and have a swim or whatever in the afternoon. It was, I don't know, I can't put my finger on it, but it just wasn't for me at the time. You know, it was a great experience, but I kind of graduated at this point, and I thought, right, I'm going to go and try and put my qualifications to use and go part-time and probably be more of a mainstay in whatever team I wanted to play for. And I made that decision. I wouldn't say I've ever regretted the decision. Obviously, you could look at how it could have gone if things had worked out differently, but I don't regret that decision, because you know I look at the decisions I've made in my both my life work wise and football wise, and they've worked out reasonably well for me. So that was the summer of 2002. Went and signed for Forfar, and obviously Steve and Dunk had got the job at Aberdeen, I think probably November time. Just before he left.
I read a quote somewhere saying that, I think it was later on in your career actually, but you were looking back at your time when you went part-time, I should say, and you called full-time training boring. Was that kind of summed up how you felt at the time, just the life as a full-time player, boring and rather uneventful?
Maybe, I don't know, I can't remember saying boring. No, I wouldn't say. I mean, the training part of it was great. You'd get up in the morning, you'd do what you love doing. It wouldn't be a particularly early start. You'd get to the stadium for before 10 o'clock. You'd get changed. You'd be out in the bus to the training ground for 10:30. Start training for a couple of hours back. Kind of showered, changed, and then the rest of the day was yours from pretty much kind of 1 o'clock back at one onwards. So from that point of view, sounds like a pretty idealistic life, in a lot of ways. But I suppose it was the afternoons that became a bit monotonous for me. You're kind of sitting around the house, or you're repeating going to the gym every day, or going for a swim. And I don't know, all my friends were kind of back home in Aberdeen, and it was too big a distance to kind of travel as much as you would have. Had things been different, and at that point, if I'd lived in Aberdeen, or would my decision have been different? I don't know. But just for me, I just thought there was more. And I guess if you're sitting there earning 25 grand a week, you're probably all right with 2 hours training and then do what you like in the afternoons. But life like that, I suppose a lot of the full time players that are probably out with the Celtic Rangers and maybe Aberdeen Hearts, that type of clubs, Hibs. It's very different, and I just knew in myself that what I wanted to do was go and utilise the kind of qualifications I'd got, get myself a start career wise, play part time football at the best level I possibly could, and see what happened from there. So, I wouldn't say boring. That's definitely not the right term for it, but just something about it, it just didn't work for me. I didn't enjoy it as much as I thought I was going to do. So, made a decision otherwise.
Well, I got the quote for the Daily Record, so it probably was wrong. So I should maybe I maybe explain it. You talk about kind of wanting to go part time and have your career behind you and things like that. Was that something that it was bred into you by family or friends, somebody that you thought would give you good advice? Because like an 18-year-old would quite think, right, I want to play full time. That's me. I've made it. I'm going to earn this amount of money. That's me on a career path to fame and fortune. But you obviously was slightly different. Were you influenced by people around you?
No, I wouldn't say I was. I wouldn't say I was overly influenced. Family's always been supportive of whatever I've done or chosen to do, and I wouldn't say I was influenced by that. I guess I've always been aware of all aspects of it, and yeah, you hear the stories, you see people going on and having fantastic footballing careers and earning huge sums of money, and I guess I was always aware of, that's great, but what if I get to retirement age 35 years old and I've pottered around and the lower leagues, but kind of bottom Premier League, Championship type level in Scotland, and you've had a fantastic career doing that, and then you've got to start again at 35 or whatever age you retire. And I think I just weighed it up, and I mean, there was a number of opportunities. You hear about interest in you. Both my time at Inverness, Forfar as well, and then early days at Peterhead, you kind of hear snippets from various places, newspaper articles, and you have agents phoning you and stuff like that, telling you that such and such likes you, and they've been watching you, and what's your views on a move here, and what's your it's easy to get caught up in it, particularly stuff, I suppose, in my time at Inverness and at Forfar, there was some pretty decent interest, if you'd believe that, at the time. And yeah, I guess you just never know. Nothing ever materialised into anything concrete. I know that there was a couple of bids and pretty substantial bids put in for us. Main one that I'm aware of, you know, was when I was at Forfar. You just don't know what would happen. I didn't actually find out about that until the end of the season. I don't know what decision we would have taken if that had been accepted at the time. Difficult one. Like I said, I don't regret any decisions that I've made, but I think I've always just had an awareness of, career-wise, you know, there's a small amount that really do very well. There's a bunch of people that will have a great career, but having gone and done university, whatever that I'd done, do I really want to leave that to chance? And why not start now? And, you know, another big factor is that I've always been somebody that likes to be, I suppose you can say it, one of the kind of key players or important players in a team. And, you know, that drives me on, or did drive me on. I suppose still does in a lot of ways with things, other things that you do in life. So that was a factor as well. You know, at Inverness, I was, you know, a squad player, played my fair share of games, but, you know, equally was on the bench a number of times as well. And when I moved, that changed, and I became an important player in Forfar's team, and obviously Peterhead's team for a number of years as well. So.
Was you more aware at a younger age the career that you know footballers can have, that you wanted to do something with your qualifications rather than leaving it to the chance of what if could have been, you know, with potential transfers?
It's a difficult one thinking back now. I don't know what the you know, prevailing thought was in my mind, other than I knew that I didn't overly enjoy the full-time year. I found I had a lot of spare time in my hands, which I suppose where the potential boredom came in. And, I was living away, which, you know, was fine in a lot of ways, but equally off my friends and kind of family were back here. And having got the qualification that I'd got, and, you know, seeing a number of my pals starting work, you know, that I'd been at uni with or been to school with, and, you know, seeing the kind of careers that they were beginning to forge. And I guess I just weighed it all up, and at that point in time, felt like I moved to, you know, it was Forfar. I suppose Forfar was where I ended up going at that time, and playing part-time at a good level, and also getting the opportunity to work. It was KBR at the time, and my kind of graduate development role. It was all the kind of, everything aligned for me at that point. And see, I think it was ultimately a good decision. But what drove it, or what was the kind of finishing touch to that decision? I can't quite put my finger on, I suppose.
You said you ended up going to Forfar. You played, I think, every game that season, which is obviously a big contrast to what you were doing at Inverness.
Yeah, we played, you know, we played every game. I knew the manager. The manager was a big reason. I mean, I was talking to Peterhead that season as well, Ian Wilson, pretty close to joining Peterhead straight from Inverness. I think the attraction for Forfar at the time was they were playing in the higher league, and I always, I suppose, I wanted to play at the best level I could be, but, you know, notwithstanding the fact that I'd kind of like to be an important player in that team as well. But so Forfar, Neil Cooper, who, not Neil, that was the manager at Peterhead, obviously, the other Neil. So he was manager there. He was a great guy. I spoke to him a lot. Travelled with him from Aberdeen as well, because, you know, trained at Forfar, we trained at Perth, and I just had a great season with him. You know, he was a terrific coach, terrific guy. We had a really good team, played up front with Paul Tosh, who played around in the, you know, the Premier League, Dundee, and he was a great player, great lad as well, and we had a really good partnership. And there was a number of players, Kevin Byers that we had up at Inverness for a period of time, Barry Sellers. Just had a really, really good team at Forfar, a good bunch, and we did really well. We were up top end of that division. I don't think there were playoffs at the time, but we just kind of missed out on second place, I think. There's always a couple of full-time teams and had a great year. Neil left to go back to Aberdeen to work under Steve Patterson and Duncan Shearer. I think he meant to take their under sort of 20s or 21s at the time. So he left Christmas time and Ray Stewart, ex-Dundee United and Livingston manager, he came in for the second half of the season. But yeah, I was really close to coming to Peterhead the year earlier.
Was your after you kind of finished that year, were you kind of happy with your decision then that you'd left and you'd go on to pursue almost like playing every game, like your decision to leave was just justified?
Yeah, I think I could take that in two parts. I mean, the first 6 months of that that season, obviously, it was with Neil Cooper, and it was great. And I wasn't working at the time. I hadn't started my job with KBR at the time. So, you know, there was a little bit of interest in me at that point. A couple of Scottish teams and then a couple of English teams. Again, never really came to much, other than obviously I found out later on that season that potentially one could have. But I think if something had come along the first 6 months of that season, it would have been an interesting decision, because I hadn't actually started working properly at that point, and I was really enjoying football. I was doing really well, scoring a lot of goals, top scorer in the 4-4 team that year, which when the company that I was keeping, you know, the likes of Paul Tosh and stuff, was a great achievement for me. And it would have been interesting to see what had happened if one of those, you know, pieces of interest had turned into, you know, formalised and there'd been something that I could have decided upon, I suppose. Second half of the season, obviously, when Neil gone, Ray came in, and Ray was a completely different character. I think at that point, travel became a big deal. You know, we're travelling to Forfar twice a week for training from Dice, because I'd started work at this point. I was working in Dice in Aberdeen, so getting through the city and getting all the way down to Perth, and always to have a laugh. I shared the travel with Ian Good, who obviously came to Peterhead at the same time, and you know, we'd be sitting there with the windows down in the car on the way up the road for training, knackered because he'd been working all day and just finished training session. You're trying not to fall asleep when you're, you know, it was quite dangerous when you think about it. But yeah, it became a lot, and I spoke to, probably shouldn't say that, but I spoke to Ian Wilson at the time, and towards the end of that season, it's like, look, you know, what's your situation? So I kind of said to Forfar, look, I need to call it quits. I need to move back home where there's less travelling, because we work, it's too much for me. And we eventually got to a place where they agreed, and obviously Peterhead and Forfar sorted out a fee, which incidentally was significantly lower than the fee that they'd rejected for me, you know, midway through the season. If everything proved to be correct. And I moved to Peterhead in the summer of, 2003. And so went on for there.
I was going to say, see all these sources or kind of interest that you were reading for, the one for the Daily Record, was it?
No, not the Daily Record. I'd actually...
Because they're proven to be wrong already. So.
Do you know what? That's the thing. You just don't know. I mean, who knows what, you know, for these players that are playing at the kind of top level, and, you know, they must see speculation about themselves all the time. What do you believe? What do you not believe? I mean, for me, it was nice to think that the interest was true. You know, I've got a pretty good account that certainly one of those, you know, was, but I don't know. Nobody ever spoke to me about it, so I'll quite like the thought that it was true, and I'll just stick with that. But it was flattering at the time, and like I said, but for me, the travelling down to Forfar became too much. Certainly with training in Perth, and the Peterhead option was perfect in a number of different fronts. So that kind of forced the move there, I suppose, in the summer, and on the basis of the travel was getting too much and moved to Peterhead.
Had you kept in touch with Ian Wilson through the year, or was it just kind of towards the end of that season that you started speaking to him again?
No, I spoke to him obviously at the end of the season before, where, you know, he kind of said to me, look, don't sign anything with anyone, speak to me. And we'd had a number of conversations, and I was really close to go in. I think Forfar probably just acted a wee bit quicker as far as, you know, struck a deal with Inverness, because obviously I was, even though I was out of contract, I was under 24 at the time, so there had to be a fee paid. And, you know, Neil had been really, really keen to get us in and spoke to me regularly, and just they were in the league above, and it just worked. So I actually bought a flat as well, just opposite Ian Good. So I think he obviously played there at the time as well, so we became friendly, and it just made sense at the time. And Ian started speaking to us, well, back end of that season, I suppose, it was, you know, with a view to what's happening next season. Obviously I was still under contract, so I needed to, you know, he needed to speak to Forfar, which ultimately he did. And then once Peterhead and Forfar had kind of sorted out the details, I was allowed to speak to Peterhead, and I think it was up to a pre-season friendly at Huntley, it was, and everything was done and dusted there, just on the pitch before the game, and the rest is history.
I'm very glamorous, eh?
Yeah, I remember taking a walk into his, you know, giving the nod of come here, and we took a walk into the middle of the pitch at Huntley, and I think it was less than 5 minutes. It was just, okay, let's make this happen, deal done, and on we go.
What was his sort of expectations of you for that season then? Did he give you any ideas of how he was expecting you to play, or what his expectations for the team were?
I mean, we were ambitious for promotion. I think narrowly missed out the year before, and was super keen on promotion, and that was the target as far as I was concerned. I think he signed Roddy Grant that season as well, or that, you know, and Ian Stewart and Martin Johnson were both there as well, so there was a fair front line. But you know, it was a case of just come in. You've obviously had a good season last year in the league up, and you know, we want you to come in and do that for us and get us promoted. So that all made sense. He was keen to sign us. You know, ambitions match kind of my own as far as let's get out of this league as quickly as we possibly can and press on upwards. That all sounded good, and the added benefit of training and, you know, training in Aberdeen and a lot more kind of local content for me just worked perfectly. It was a perfect match.
Was Ian under pressure to get promoted, or did you feel he was under pressure to get promoted? Because I think he finished like third or fourth, like two seasons in a row.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say I ever felt he was under pressure. I knew the club was ambitious. I knew, you know, my dad had spent time there as well as a manager, so I knew, you know, I knew the club were really, really ambitious and had massive aspirations to progress. I would never say Ian let that show to any of the players. Certainly not as far as I'm concerned. Obviously, that season it didn't quite pan out for him, and I think towards the kind of end of that year, Christmas time, he was obviously replaced by Ian Stewart and Paul Mathers.
Just to kind of look at the stats for your first season, I think you got one goal in your first 12, and then once kind of Ian Stewart took over, you then got 17 and 27. Was there a difference in the style, or was it just Ian maybe giving you a little bit more freedom?
I think Ian took over, and first thing Ian did, I mean, Ian was a player. Ian was a player, you know, at the time when he got the job, and I think he recognised a couple of things that he wanted to change, primarily fitness related, being honest, and you know, the rest of that season there was a huge focus on fitness. And I think going into my sort of second season, third season with Ian Stewart in charge, it's probably as fit as I've ever been in my life. You know, I think he put on these he put on these optional third sessions a week. You know, I was like, but if you don't come, you won't play. That type of idea. The attendance at these optional sessions was incredible, but it made a massive difference. I mean, I think everybody was super fit, and it was just, you know, it was visible for with the season that we want to have, the year that we kind of chased Gretna all the way, or were leading Gretna for long periods of time, given the kind of investment they had made. But no, as far as I think that was coincidence. I mean, it was a different league, it was a different team. Perhaps I had higher expectations of myself when I signed for Peterhead, and maybe trying a wee bit hard, and you know, it's about your strike partner as well, and you know, there was a lot of chopping and changing that season. So I think the thing that I quite liked it for, you know, Paul Tosh was a bit of a battering ram as well. You know, he big, strong, quick. He was physical, and I could kind of play as almost like the second striker. You know, as I think I probably took more of the battering ram role in my first season at Peterhead, or certainly initially, and that wasn't really my style. Even though I'm reasonably tall, it was you know, I was probably more of a second striker than I was of a target man at kind of that age. And I think it's just coincidence, but certainly there was a huge focus on fitness when Ian came in, and I know personally it made a massive difference to me as far as, you know, my level of performance was concerned. I think I missed pre-season that season as well, because when I signed for Peterhead, I was actually on holiday and basically straight back into, I think, a week's worth of training and then into the fixtures. And, you know, you hear a lot of people talking about, if you don't do a good pre-season, you know, it doesn't set you up right for the whole season ahead. Absolutely couldn't agree more with that. So I think there was a number of factors, but quite interesting stats there. I didn't realise the numbers, but it would suggest that there was a change at some point. But I think it was predominantly fitness.
You mentioned likes of Martin Johnson there as well. What was it like to be in the dressing room with that kind of guys at that time?
I've known Martin obviously since then, and you know, his son played football with my son, so I've seen Martin a lot over the years. And Martin's a really quiet guy, but just really, really good football player. Probably. You know, I think if he had a wee bit more pace, he would have and could have played, you know, at a higher level than he did. But he's a fantastic player, really, really good. Scored a lot of goals for Peterhead. Look at Ian Stewart. I mean, Ian, I know Ian. I probably didn't see Ian at his best when he was at Inverness Cali, but, you know, I've heard all the stories and saw his goals scored. I mean, phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And you know, he was just an exceptional finisher, second to none. Roddy Grant was different. You know, Roddy was obviously coming at the end of his career, and he had a great reputation. And I don't think it necessarily worked out for him particularly well at Peterhead that season. And so there was a bit of chopping and changing. But all different characters. You know, Robbie Rayside, Sean McSkimmon, Mark Berry. You know, there's a huge Andy Roddy, Jamie Buchan. You know, you go through the team, and, you know, in their day it would have been a hell of a team, but obviously they'd all drop down the levels at various points for various reasons. But it was an exceptional team, and good dressing room. It'd be around a lot of good ex-pros.
That's it for part one of our interview with former striker Martin Babbage. Join us for part two as he tells us more about his 10 years at Peterhead. Until then, for Martin Smith and myself, Colin Byers, thanks for listening, and we'll see you all very soon.